Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together. Whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.
Hello and welcome to My Property World. I'm Will Mallard and I'm joined once again by Adam Lawrence. Adam, you're most welcome.
Thanks for having me again, Will.
So, Adam, what would be really handy is a quick outline of your own background, because we're going to be talking today about portfolio exit. So maybe couch your introduction, just to give a bit of context to the listeners. Why I've asked you on to discuss this topic of portfolio exits?
Yeah, sure thing, Will. So firstly, I've worked in financial services and from a sort of cross-business consultancy perspective as well. So I know quite a bit about funding. I know quite a bit about the way the lender thinks about that side of the equation as well. And then also in practice, I've bought over 400 properties in the last 10 years, and a dozen or so of those, a dozen or so have been portfolio or block purchases of some kind, ranging from a handful of units all the way up to 91 units in one go. So I've got quite a bit of practical and theoretical experience, I think, in this area.
Very good. And you've got a really good framework of looking at this. So if you put yourself in the shoes of a portfolio landlord, what is the basic sort of high level framework? And we can drive into the detail of each component part, but you've split it up into three or four bits, I believe.
Okay, sure thing. So first of all, I think you've got to look at who your likely buyer is going to be, because if you don't spend any time understanding who your buyer is, how are you going to know how you're going to communicate with them, or how your broker or whoever you engage to sell this portfolio, how are they going to communicate with them if you don't understand who they are? And that's probably a key one that most people don't do. They don't put themselves in the other side's shoes. And certainly from my perspective as a buyer of these things, one of the things that's helped me a lot has been to put myself into the shoes of the vendor and understand what they want to achieve. So what do you want to achieve? And why? I'd really encourage you to ask why, which one of those bits are most important, because when it comes to sale, a lot of people who, you know, have spent all these usually many years, usually lots of hard work, risk, headaches, all the rest of it, and bought stuff, you know, quite keenly, maybe bought stuff below market value, maybe added some value, and then time, of course, has added some value on as well. They then immediately think, right, I'm going to present this portfolio to market and it's going to sell at full price really quickly and I'm going to get the money, you know, in 28 days. And that is obviously not realistic. A lot of people don't have experience selling stuff because they've only ever purchased, really. And then they think, right, okay, why would you not want to buy this in one go? Very, very few of the portfolios I've purchased have been what we would call proper going concerns, Will. You know, they've been a little bit scrappy somewhere along the line. Some of them have been, you know, exhausted really, in terms of they haven't been perhaps maintained as well as they should have been. And still sometimes the vendors have thought they're going to get as much money as the house next door, which has been extended, has got an owner-occupier in there, has got a 10 grand kitchen in there and a log burner and things like that, whereas this is a basic magnolia terrace without those sort of improvements on it, you know. So I think that comes to sort of being realistic and also understanding what you might trade off. So do you want the most money, even if that takes you 2, 3, 5 years? Do you want the most certainty, even if that costs you a bit of money? Do you want to do it in the quickest possible time? Are you trying to achieve something else? And just remember, there is a trade-off between those things. And I think going back to the put yourself in the shoes of the buyer, if you understand who the buyer might be and what they might want, can you present them with the last 2 or 3 years' accounts, for example, and say, look, this portfolio, yeah, here we go, this is the risk value of it, you know, can you eat? So it's important to be looking at that, the potential buyer, why they might be buying it, what information you've got for the buyer. You know, more, it's not one of these situations, in my view, where less is more. You know, people want to know about the downsides. If it's a big portfolio, you've got a different audience to a sort of 2 or 3 properties. You know, if you've got a Fergus Wilson portfolio, then your buyers are going to be wanting to know absolutely everything in their due diligence. They want to know the real cash flow. Ultimately, at the end of the day, is this a portfolio where it works because you've got a lot of stuff that's on 1.75% mortgages that are hangovers from sort of 2008, 2009, and therefore it's going to be difficult for anybody to buy it. And also, you know, go through with that fine-tooth comb and work out, you know, actually that one, would that be better as an owner-occupier property? You're almost always going to achieve more in the owner-occupier market, but does it need a big refurb to do that? Is it the right part of town to do that? You know, am I willing to put the time and effort in to do that? If not, should I look at someone else maybe putting the time and effort in for me, but still do that as some kind of assisted sale or an arrangement like that? You know, there are more creative solutions, and it is one of those situations where the more effort you put in, and it's a real, I see this all the time, the mindset comes round to, right, I've decided I'm going to sell, I'm checking out of this business, I've had enough. Let's face it, there's half a dozen or maybe a dozen or maybe 6 dozen reasons why landlords could be getting quite fed up over the last sort of 6 or 7 years, Will. And ultimately, it comes down to what sort of time and effort needs to be put in. If a trader doesn't need to buy the property in order to make a deal work, they're saving 3% stamp duty, they're saving money on legals, they're saving money on financing costs. You know, try and keep that money in the pot would be one of the best pieces of advice that I could give to people. I do that all the time with, if you've got properties that are held within a limited company, it's going to be much more attractive for a buyer to buy the company than it is to buy the properties. Now, there are caveats to that, you know, depending on the trading history of the company. But generally speaking, you've got much lower stamp duty to deal with. You know, you might have some financing already in place that's going to be still available to you as the new owner of the shares in the company. It's not going to crystallize some gains. There are huge advantages in selling the company, but you've got to be talking to the right audience. And that comes back to that sort of positioning of it in the market, Will, I think.
So the range of alternatives, people, I think this is quite a common theme in life. Generally, people are just unaware or don't contemplate the number of other ways of skinning the cat, so to speak. What would be, we've covered briefly, I think the most important thing that I've taken from this, Adam, is thinking about who the buyer is and trying to understand what they want and making it really easy for them to get it from you. Like your example about the creative deal structure or strategy is, I think, a really good way of thinking about things. And I think as a seller, people they don't sell particularly often, and they often don't think about it early enough. What, in an ideal world, you probably think about the exit before you buy, but what would your advice be to someone who perhaps is just starting to contemplate exit options? What would be the good questions?
So I think I'd be collating everything together, starting to think about what do my accounts look like? You know, are there maybe one-off costs or things that I should be considering doing a bit of a cheaper solution on if I'm approaching exit? You know, I would have a different mindset on a property if I'm going to hold it for the next 10 or 15 years versus one that I'm going to hold for the next sort of 2 or 3 years or on a shorter time frame, of course. So yeah, so you've definitely got to consider, you know, how much time you've got left owning these places, and not suggesting that you would let them go to rack and ruin, but you're going to take a different approach to certain items, especially larger items of maintenance, if you're only going to own them for another 1 or 2 years. So I definitely consider that. But what you don't want to do is let the appearance go such that people think, right, just another tired old portfolio, because that's going to cost you more money. So you've got to be really tactical about not just maintenance, but the longer term, you know, structural items with the building and stuff like that. And then think about how you present them in the best possible light to the market. Because, you know, people who think curb appeal isn't a thing, for example, it's definitely a thing. It's a thing on commercial properties. It's a thing on portfolios. You know, even the surveyors will fall for the old, you know, I had a block of flats surveyed the other month, for example. And what's the first thing the surveyor said? He said, doesn't it look really nice and looked after? And that's because we'd spent about £80 on some planters at the front of the building, which just gave it that little touch of, doesn't it look good? So from the start, you knew you were onto more of a winner than you would have been, you know?
Well, that's a great example. And you mentioned the surveyor. What other professionals do you think it's important to get involved early when thinking about a portfolio exit?
Oh, I think without a shadow of a doubt, your accountant / tax advisor has got to be very close to this, because there can be lots of nuances whereby, for example, going back to that limited company sales style approach rather than just selling the properties, it might well be that you can take less money, so you've got more vendors interested, but you can leave with more money in your pocket by selling the whole limited company. Now, it's crazy not to explore those options properly, and you need a really, really good tax advisor to be advising you on it. If you've got an accountant who, with due respect to them, just sort of does your books once a year and doesn't really do the tax strategy piece, this is the time to go and pay for someone good to look over the situation and talk it through with you, you know. And if you need to, go and find a property industry consultant who can assist you on these sorts of exits, because this is the time not to be thinking about a couple of grand when you could be talking about the difference in a couple of hundred grand if you do the exit in a correct way. There's lots of reasons why people would want to look into things like assisting you with assisted sales options, and that, you know, for them to be win-win situations. Don't get yourself into a mindset of everybody who does rent to rent has got no assets and no money, because that's absolutely not true. You know, just evaluate every opportunity as it comes, really, and look at a whole spread of options, or work with someone who can talk you through those options really well.
And the understanding the time frame piece, I think that's a quite an important element that changes everything quite dramatically. So if there's a bit of time pressure in terms of your personal circumstances, what would be your advice to someone?
I would start looking at what an auction exit looks like if you're feeling time pressure. But what I wouldn't do, and a big mistake that especially people with bigger portfolios sometimes make, is just go down to the local auction house and give them the whole lot. I would
either speak to an auction specialist who might be able to help you place some of those properties, or I would do the legwork myself and go out and look and find and talk to 5 or 6 different auction houses in the broader locale or in London. Obviously, it depends whether the properties are in London anyway already, but you tend to get fairly fair prices in London auctions depending on where in the country your portfolio is. So it's not a good idea to put 40 entries into one catalogue, because it's just going to flood the market. There won't be all those buyers there all in one go. Whereas if you break that up among sort of 5 or 6 different auctions, then it might not be even too obvious that this whole portfolio is for sale. So staggering the time, staggering the person who's selling it, or the house that's selling it, all of those are good ideas, really. And that will help you achieve the best price rather than it look like. Quite often those ones that go with, 40 go into an auction, quite often they end up being a deal there for someone, but it's probably a better deal for the buyer than it is for the seller normally will. So, be keen to try and steer people away from that as much as possible.
Okay. Well, that's really good advice. And in terms of if someone was interested in looking you up on LinkedIn, say, how would they do that? What's your LinkedIn ID?
Yeah, so if they search for Adam G. Lawrence on LinkedIn, then they'll find me looking all wonderful and dapper in a nice suit, and just send me a message or a connection request. And if there's any way I can help, then I'll certainly try to do so.
Okay. Now we've got an image of you sitting in a t-shirt in the sunshine getting sunburnt, which is hopefully what we've got coming up shortly. Adam G. Lawrence at LinkedIn, or at least on LinkedIn. You're very welcome. I'm Will Mallard. This is My Property World. And Adam Lawrence, thanks again.
Thanks very much, Will.
Welcome to My Property World, a light and informative look at all things property. We have designed this series for people involved in property and property finance in the UK market. However, we do take examples from all around the property world. Our aim is for us to make money from property together, whether that be buying, selling, financing, trading, or getting involved in a deal in another way. We do this by informing, entertaining, and enjoying ourselves talking property, which gives you a chance to get to know us, what we're up to, and to check us out until you're ready to make money together. In the meantime, My Property World is free and fun, so plug in your headphones and enjoy. We would love for you to like, share, and comment, so please do on social media. And if you have questions, ideas for topics, or deals you would like to explore, we're always looking for guests, so get in touch via the My Property World profile.